Jason, the Bears just beat the defending Super Bowl champion. We'll talk about that and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, after spending all season saying that the Bears have never beat nobody good, all they did today was went out and beat the 8-3 Philadelphia Eagles in Philly. They won 24-15 in a game that wasn't even that close. Without sounding too melodramatic, this has changed the way I think about the Bears. How about you?
Oh, it should. This is, you can say whatever you want about Philly's kind of in their annual midseason slump, but that's still a really good team. This is easily the best win the Bears have. And I do think it changes everything. We didn't know if they could beat teams like this. We just didn't know. Maybe you thought they could, maybe you thought they couldn't, but we didn't know if they could. Ben Johnson has said all season that this would be about the time that everything would start clicking and that they'd be playing their best football going into December. And we had to wait and see if that's the case. It's definitely the case. I think that this is the first time it's safe to be hopeful. If you're following the Bears and you're one of these frustrated Bears fans who sat through all these seasons where you got your hopes up only to have them ripped out from under you, and you're cynical because of that, I understand why. But I think that this has put you at a point where it's safe to be hopeful. This is a really convincing win. Other than Caleb Williams not playing very well, and maybe that is mostly attributable to the wind and the cold. I don't know. This is really a solid way to win all the way around. The Bears really had control of the game for most or all of it. It was not close at the end. They did put them away at the end. I think their defense, Patrick, if we can start there, that's the thing I am most encouraged by as far as having an optimistic outlook on the Bears going forward in the rest of the season, because they had typically been a defense that had given up a lot of yards and given up a lot of points and prevented things from being worse by making incredible, heroic takeaways. That will work sometimes. That is not something you can count on to work all the time. What works all the time is to be a solid play-to-play, drive-to-drive defense that then gets some of those game-changing plays. And that's what you saw today. And I think it's by no accident that coincides with the return of Kyler Gordon and Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, you're right. And especially, you know, at corner, now something that was a weakness for most of the season turns into a strength, to the point to where Dennis Allen has got to find out a way to get all these guys in the game. I worry about the pass rush, and you know, today they had no sacks. They had one quarterback hurry, and it came from CJ, or one quarterback hit, and it came from CJ Gardner-Johnson. So that is not a formula that you can rely on too much. But you know, at some point, you know, Nashawn Wright, you know, yanks the ball out of Jalen Hurts' hands on the tush push, and Kevin Byard intercepts a really terrible Jalen Hurts throw, and you sit there and go like they shouldn't be able to do this every week, and they do this every week now. It's really something to watch. They need to find a way to get the quarterback down, but in the defensive backfield, they have guys who really can make you pay, kind of whether you do pressure the quarterback or not.
And they should still get TJ Edwards back and Tremaine Edmonds back, which would help particularly their run defense, but would also help them all the way around. Brett, you mentioned that tush push play. When you watch that replay, Nashawn Wright's assignment on that play is to go do only that.
Yep.
I know this was a play you were really fixed on leading up to the game. I think we were in year three of tush push. And when the NFL did not ban it, the Eagles put out this highlight reel of all their tush push plays succeeding. It was just one after another on Twitter. I would not have bet on the Bears to be the team to solve that.
Yeah, tush push started in 2022, so we're in year four or year three and a half of it. And the Bears found something that's interesting, which is, you know, these plays, they don't blow the tush push dead very quickly, typically. And that's because it's a rugby scrum and everybody's kind of just moving forward. And so long as they're going to let him kind of linger there in a hole or in a pile, you know, reaching for the ball is a great idea. And, you know, it was only the second time Jalen Hurts has ever fumbled on a tush push play. So when you think of all the, you know, hundreds of times they've run it, that's pretty impressive. I'm sure other teams have tried to do this too. I think it's a credit to Wright that he got the ball out. But the thing that I thought was really impressive was when the ball fell on the ground, you know, the 6'4 skinny corner, you know, was the guy who, you know, who wound up with it at the bottom of the pile. And he joked afterwards that whatever offensive lineman it was, you know, wasn't nearly as strong as Wright thought he would be, because he was able to kind of tear it away and then fall on it. It's this, the Nashawn Wright story is the best story of the Bears season, I think. And somebody who was lucky to have a job at the start of the year, somebody who the Bears didn't plan really on playing until Jalen Johnson, you know, got hurt, is like, he might make the Pro Bowl, Jason. Like, that's, he's been, where would they be without him? He's just been remarkable. And today was probably the best example yet.
Just the football story is impressive, that this is a guy who was written off by two teams, the Cowboys and the Vikings. His position coach gets hired in Chicago and says, hey, I know a guy. Trust me.
Right.
Give this guy a look. And he comes in and he wins the trust of the coaching staff so quickly. There's also the story that we've been writing about a lot and that they covered on the pregame show on Amazon on Friday, just about the personal tragedy that he's gone through with his coach, John Beam, dying, and just how emotional, or being killed, and how emotional that is for him. I mean, there's so many different elements to the Nashawn Wright story that make him one of these guys in sports that you just can't help but root for.
Yeah, and you know, he's I love the stat that he is tied for the tallest cornerback in the history of the sport, which is great.
And the timing, timing of this play where he strips Jalen Hurts on the tush push, I mean, the Bears might not have won if not for this. Philly is threatening at that time to take the lead, and not only are they not able to get any points, I mean, then the Bears march down the field the other way to make it 17-9. I mean, that you couldn't have a more deflating sequence for Philly than that. And Nashawn Wright was right in the middle of it.
Yeah. And to put a button on it, we were talking to Al Harris the other day and somebody had asked him, hey, listen, he's 6'4". What is it that he can't do because he's 6'4"? Can he not get low enough? Can he not use the right technique? And Al Harris just seemed offended by the question. Went, no, he does the same stuff everybody else does. He's a really good football player. Yeah, I mean, the turn of events there is remarkable, because not only did the Bears get the ball away at the freaking 12-yard line, but then the first play from scrimmage afterwards is a 31-yard run by Kyle Manungai. And I think if the tush push strip wasn't the most important play of the game, the run by Manungai might have been, because all of a sudden you've got this swell of momentum going the Bears' direction, and maybe more notably going away from the Eagles. I asked a guy who covers the Eagles at halftime today, like, are the Eagles better off playing road games? Like, seriously, like, like, this crowd showed up just
the
ready.
The crowd's to a boo. Negative factor.
Yeah, they showed up just ready to boo. And, you know, there were times when, you know, I mean, the first A.J. Brown touchdown, you sit there and go, oh, here come the Eagles. And, you know, the crowd was kind of into it. And then the minute something bad happened, it felt like the home crowd was making it even worse. And that was certainly the case when you've got Manungai. I mean, he goes for 35 yards, then 5, then 9, then 1, then 9. I mean, he's a one-man wrecking crew there. And all of a sudden, the Bears got the ball, you know, on 4th and 5 at the Eagles 37. And I thought it was an interesting play call, because given the wind and given the weather, I don't think you could have blamed Ben Johnson for taking a delay of game and punting the ball, say, from his own 42. But instead, he decided to go for it on 4th and 5. And, you know, the Bears receivers spent all day slipping to the ground when the ball was thrown to them. You know, I can think of Rome, DJ, and Luther Burden all doing it. On this play on 4th and 5, Caleb looks left for Colson Loveland, and the guy guarding him slips. And Caleb said he was actually in the process of throwing the ball to Loveland when he saw the guy slip and went, oh, and I just got to put it right on him. I can't lead him anywhere. Just put it right on him now. So they get 7 yards, and all of a sudden now it's, you know, first and goal at the 30, or first and 10 at the 30, and four plays later, Kyle Manungai scores. You know, the Cole Kmet play was the dagger in this game, but I think that conversion to Colson Loveland kept the momentum going, and the Bears would never give that.
Incredible running game for the Bears, and they needed it. Kyle Manungai, your guy. 22 carries for 130 yards and a touchdown. DeAndre Swift, 18 carries for 125 yards and a touchdown. Combined together, they averaged 6.4 yards per carry. And man, it sure looked like, oh, by the way, Kyle Manungai. So 22nd running back drafted, I believe.
Yes. The second to last. Yep.
Third in his class as of right now in rushing yards this season. Of the rookie class.
Yeah,
and it's about where you go, man. Not how high you go, but what situation you end up in.
Well, and the situation that he wound up in on Friday night was running behind an offensive line that could kind of do whatever they wanted. And, you know, Ben Johnson made a pretty kind of sneaky, controversial decision before the game in playing Ozzie Trapillo and starting him at left tackle instead of Theo Benedict, who was healthy. And, you know, I think you and I can agree that Theo taking Braxton Jones's place really sparked the run game. You know, when you sit there and go, why did the run game get better kind of in week three? It was that. And, you know, now he's, you know, gotten replaced by a guy who, on one hand, Ozzie's the second round pick. You obviously want to give him a chance. And, you know, on pedigree alone, you know, I guess that, you know, that you want to see what you've got. But on the other hand, like, Ben was, what, just 6 weeks ago telling us that Ozzie wasn't comfortable playing on the left side? You know, they were very vocal with their critiques of him, and now he's the starting left tackle on a 9-3 football team.
Yeah, and the run game was phenomenal, not just in the numbers that it produced, 281 yards rushing on a day where, again, you needed it because you weren't getting anything really out of the passing game. But that run game, if you kind of do forensics on how it got to this point, everything about it, it makes you more confident in Ben Johnson. It's mm-hmm. Ben Johnson taking over the Bears as head coach in January, having a clear vision of how he wanted this rushing attack to look. Violent and vertical. A lot different than how DeAndre Swift ran last year. You are looking at a much different runner in DeAndre Swift, no matter how much he denies it. Maybe out of pride or whatever. You can see it. The coaches will tell you this. The coaches will say he looks different than he did last year. We all see it. And Kyle Manungai is a guy that they drafted because he could do that and he knows nothing else. That's the only training he's gotten has been with these guys. But Ben Johnson takes over in January as head coach with a vision of how he wants this to look. And then he goes outside. I give him a lot of credit for this, for a lot of his hires being like this. He goes outside his circle to hire Eric Bieniemy to enforce this, to kind of implement the rushing style, the running style that he wants. Then they go and beef up their offensive line on the interior. And they, you know, there's a lot going on at left tackle, but four out of those five spots you feel really solid about. And then they insist that those guys run that way. And if DeAndre Swift doesn't run that way, well, then Kyle Manungai is going to get 30 carries or whatever. Mm-hmm. They've got two guys who are running the way that Ben Johnson wants them to run, that make his plays work, and they have a massive, impressive top 10 offensive line clearing the way for that. And you can do a lot with that. There's so much about them right now where I think the most impressive thing offensively is that you can score enough points to win this game on a day when Caleb Williams statistically is a disaster. Now, aesthetically, he closed the game great. 6 out of 6 to end the game, makes that incredible touchdown pass. Really a phenomenal throw, a very high degree of difficulty throw to Cole Kmet that you referenced. But a day where, you know, because of weather or whatever you want to attribute it to, you're getting almost nothing out of the passing game. It's great to have that kind of run game to fall back on. And I think that is something that will travel with the Bears for the rest of the season. You can use that in Green Bay. You can use that in January in playoff games.
Let me quote Ben Johnson from the postgame press conference. Quote, I probably called too many pass plays. That is the understatement of the day. Yeah, and to me, what's even more impressive about this is, you know, and I know that if the Bears had had their way and Kelvin Banks was available, they would have drafted him, the left tackle from Texas.
Yes, he went one and pick that, ahead of them, I believe, to the Saints.
And that if Trevion Henderson, the running back at Ohio State, had been available and not, and if he hadn't been picked one spot ahead of Luther Burden, the Bears would have had Trevion Henderson and would have been very happy. The fact that they're doing what they're doing, kind of with the cards that they were dealt, I think is particularly impressive. You know, they pivot to Luther Burden with the idea of, and you know, and they pivot to Colson Loveland with the idea of competition's a good thing. Everybody will, you know, all these receivers and tight ends will block their butts off because they know that if they don't, there's somebody waiting to take their place. And they will, and if, you know, they have a bad day, like let's point to Alameda Zacchaeus dropping everything that was thrown his way 2 weeks ago. If they have a bad day, you just replace them the next week. And that's how good teams work. And it seems to really be working. You know, the fact that they at left tackle until last week had gotten by with a, what was Braxton Jones? A fifth round pick, late fifth round pick.
Yes. Southern Utah.
The fact that they went, we can cover left tackle with a fifth round pick and an undrafted Canadian guy. It was probably hubris, but I mean, it worked well enough to get them where they are. And now if Ozzie's what they hope he can be, you know, maybe they do have this thing solved.
Pat, you mentioned Luther Burden, and this is another area where you're seeing Ben Johnson's influence. He and Colston Loveland both getting, and Menungai obviously, but all three rookies getting more and more involved. Specifically, you're seeing it, I think, with Loveland and Burden. Loveland's been playing all year, but now he seems to be much more part of the plan in the passing game. Burden's playing time and targets have been going up consistently. And that's another credit to Ben Johnson and Declan Doyle and Antoine Randall-El, because we have seen plenty of guys with that talent come through the Chicago Bears, and they're just not wired into the offense well enough to be trusted to be out there playing. They are getting buy-in from Luther Burden that this is the way to the field. This is the way to get snaps, and he's producing. He is becoming more and more of a weapon. He is becoming, Pat, I would almost say, like an addition, like a trade acquisition that you're getting, because he was not so much of a factor early in the year, and now he's right there with everybody else.
I'll tell you what got my attention 10 days ago was Mike Tomlin, when he was talking to reporters in Pittsburgh and was previewing the Bears, and he was talking about Burden, about Menungai, and about Loveland, and he kind of said, hey, these aren't names that you guys know, but they're really good, and this is the time of year in the NFL where rookies get good, and that's kind of what we've seen from all of them. And you know, you wrote about this too. What's so unique, I think, about the Bears' offensive attack right now is they've got eight guys. like any day could be somebody's day. I mean, Roma Dunze started the season as their unquestioned number one receiver. I think he still is, but he's not getting the target share that he got in the first 6 weeks. Like, they're distributing the ball, and you can see the offense kind of moving into, you know, 200 level, you know, a 200 level course now.
And this is what you have when you have a system, and when you have coaches who can coach the players to fit the system. That's what you get, is where it's, I don't want to say interchangeable parts, because there's not another guy on the roster that does what Roma Dunze or DJ Moore can do at their level. But when you do this, I mean, it's like you could pick anybody on this offense right now, including Caleb Williams, and say, well, if they miss the game or if they don't work out, you have all this trust in Ben Johnson and his offense and his system that he can find somebody else that can do it.
Here's the Bears receiving yards leader in order. Okay.
From today, from Friday.
Yes. Cole Kmet, 1. Luther Burden, 2. Colston Loveland, 3. Alameda Zacchaeus, 4. DJ Moore, 5. DeAndre Swift, 6. Roma Dunze, 7. He had 2 catches for 8 whole yards. And like you said, it was windy, and you know, it was a combination of Caleb being erratic and the wind really messing with him. But I mean, that's not how you would draw it up. But when it happens in a win, it's good enough.
Let's talk about Caleb for a second. Here's the line. Here are the cold hard facts: 17 for 36, 154 yards, a touchdown, an interception, and a 56.9 passer rating. He was at one point 11 for 30 passing, I believe. But a strong finish, like he always does. What do you make of the game that he had today, Patrick?
I don't think it was very good. What I appreciated about him in the first half was that he had three carries and they were all on third down, and he got the first down all three times. That's remarkable. Even if they were quarterback sneaks on two of them. As a passer, though, Jason, I don't make a whole heck of a lot of what he did. It was not good. And, you know, there were throws that he short hopped. There were throws that he threw over people's heads. And then, like I mentioned, there were three or four of them where, you know, Luther Burden stumble, kind of catches his own cleat, you know, making a cut and is falling to the ground by the time the ball gets to him. And the ball's in a decent spot. And I believe DJ Moore had one of those as well. It needs to be a lot better than this if the Bears are going to win games in January. But here's what's interesting about, if you've got a good run game and a defense that can, you know, hang on, when the weather is what it is, you know, whether it's, you know, here in Philadelphia or, you know, every other game they play the rest of the season, which are all outdoors, Jason, you can kind of get by with your quarterback. You know, your quarterback doesn't need to throw for 300 yards for you to win a game. If you're playing at Soldier Field, Lambeau Field, and in the Bay Area, it's, I don't think it's disqualifying. I don't think you can look at what Caleb did on Friday and say, oh my God, we'll never win another game if he keeps playing like that. Like, you will. You're probably not going to win the really important ones, particularly if you have to go play at SoFi or, you know, even Ford Field, you know, in the playoffs. But I don't know. It wasn't good. And I'm trying to put a little bit of a positive spin on it because, Jason, they've lost one game in the last 9 weeks of football.
Right.
But he does need to, on one hand, he needs to be much better. On the other hand, the throw to Cole Kmet today was the dagger in the game. Like, if the guy's a winner and if the numbers are bad, it's hard to have a hot takey conversation about him. And my God, like, you can't, I don't think you can air him out too bad if, you know, they've won five in a row and, you know, 9 of 10.
The conversation with Caleb Williams is really a lot like the conversation about their defense, where they are this kind of really volatile defense that it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. And then, oh, some amazing play by Kevin Byard or Nashawn Wright or Tremaine Edmonds makes everything okay. Caleb has given you a lot of games like that where it's like, man, this does not look good. Does not look good. Last 5 minutes, he takes off like a rocket.
Right.
Friday included, having a horrible game until the end. 6 for 6 at the end and an incredible touchdown pass that not everybody can make. That has worked. That can work sometimes. The formula that will work more often is to be a steady, consistent, efficient quarterback who then adds those amazing plays on top of that real solid level of play.
I always thought that the danger about... Go ahead.
It's going to take him some time to get there. And it's good when you say, you know, when you have a defense that plays like they did on Friday and a running game that runs like it did on Friday, one of the things that that does is it creates margin for Caleb Williams to keep figuring it out. This was going to need to be a transitional developmental year for Caleb Williams, no matter what. Ben Johnson comes in. He's got a totally different way of coaching him. He says, hey, nothing practically that the last staff taught this guy applies now. We're doing things totally different. Veteran quarterbacks have a challenging time sometimes adapting to a new play caller, a new offense. It was going to be a transitional year. The fact that you have enough other things going right that you can keep winning even while he's adjusting and he's developing is just a bonus. It's incredible. If things click into place for Caleb, then the Bears step into a different tier.
Much like Jalen Hurts, the best thing you could say about Caleb is that he doesn't turn the ball over. Before he threw an interception today on a screen pass that was just jumped up and grabbed by Jalen Hurts.
That was an awful interception.
Yeah. By the way, have you ever seen anybody else in life named Jalix? I feel like that's the rare unique first name. Do you want to guess the last time Caleb threw an interception before Friday?
It had to have been several games ago, I would think, right? What game?
It was. We were in Baltimore.
Oh, wow.
Do you know how long ago that was?
That was October.
It was before Halloween. Yeah, it's. I mean, that will keep you in games, and it's not sexy, but you know, his ability to stay healthy and his ability to not turn the ball over I think are two skills that previous Bears quarterbacks have not had in quite as much abundance, and I think gives him that his floor is still pretty high.
He cashes in, if you want to talk about him compared to the last two first-round picks at quarterback for the Bears, Caleb is so much more capable of making the big plays. Mm-hmm. And that is what has rescued his numbers in a lot of cases. I mean, you look at, like, for example, the Cincinnati game, he completes under 60% of his passes, but he's averaging 10 yards per pass. So, I mean, he's getting the yardage. He's not getting it play to play to play, but he's kind of going 0 for 4 and then hitting a big one. He's got that ability. He was a better passer when we first saw him in training camp than either of the two previous guys, especially ahead of where Justin Fields was at that time in year 3. I also like that Caleb has the right blend, if you want to compare him to the previous two guys, who both were pretty athletic, and Mitch Trubisky, a decent runner, and Justin Fields, an excellent runner. Caleb supplements his passing game with that rather than doing it instead of passing. He adds that in at just the right amount, I think. It's exactly the blend we were always looking for Justin Fields to establish, but he couldn't. Can you throw for 200 to 240 yards per game, somewhere in that range, and then throw 50 rushing yards on top of that, like Lamar Jackson does? If it's, I'm going to throw for 120 yards and run for 120, that isn't going to work. Caleb has the right blend, I think. He has really gotten into a nice groove, in my opinion, of using his mobility and his running as a supplement to his throwing.
Yes, and particularly when they absolutely have to have it. And that's something I think you've seen in the last month. Is Caleb being more willing to do it, but you know, he's not doing it on first down in the first quarter. He's saving it for when they need it. Jason, before we go, Ben Johnson took his shirt off and everybody's getting free hot dogs.
Tuesday.
Did you see the video? Number one.
Oh yeah.
Number two, did you think Ben Johnson would ever take his shirt off for hot dogs? I had written that off as a hell no. Given the level of intensity that he usually shows during games and after games. I mean, his press conferences with us, Jason, there's nothing frivolous about him right after the game. And this seemed like a pretty frivolous thing, but damn it, it's fun, isn't it?
I thought he was still a little too buttoned up, literally and figuratively, to do something like that. The one thing that made me think he might is that you've seen the guy all, you know, training camp and offseason. The guy's in great shape.
Right.
I mean, that would give you some confidence if you're in that good a shape. but I felt like he was just like, that was a line too far for him, that he didn't want to become, you know, he didn't want to do something that would later become a joke that people would laugh at. Oh, remember the year the Bears were so excited about being 9-3 that the coach ripped his shirt off? But he's feeling it, and he should be. These are great. These are really good wins. The Pittsburgh win was probably the best team they'd beaten to that point, and then they stepped it up a level to beat Philadelphia on the road. I mean, that if you're going to get excited about something, it's either that or get excited about the game. I mean, you know, maybe next week in Lambeau. And actually, I do want to ask you about that. So the Bears go next to Lambeau Field, where I don't remember the last time they won a game there that actually mattered to both teams. I know that they did win. I know they won the season finale, but Green Bay didn't have anything to play for in that. I don't know the last time they won a real game in Green Bay. I think that might be coming up on something like 8 or 10 years. Where would you have put their chances at winning in Green Bay before this game? And then where would you put them now after you've seen what you saw in Philadelphia?
2013, Shane McClellan breaks Aaron Rodgers' collarbone about 3 minutes into the game. That was in early October, so I presume that was meaningful for both teams. Of course, the Packers would come to Soldier Field in the finale and beat them and keep the Bears out of the playoffs.
So 12 years. It's 12 years since the Bears won a quote-unquote real game at Lambeau. That's crazy.
That's my first year on the beat, Jason. Wow. Yeah, I think that they showed – I told somebody before the game today that if the Bears beat the Eagles, it would change the way I look at the Bears, full stop. And it did. And because of that, why can't they beat the Packers? Why can't they beat the Packers on the road? I mean, stranger things have happened, including today. I think that it's possible. I don't think it's likely, but I do think that they're going to have a chance. And, you know, they say this after every game they play, and they're right. You know, their offense has not scratched the surface of what it could do. Mm-hmm. And if Caleb Williams can if Caleb Williams is better, I think that it's hard to put a ceiling on what they can do now. And that feels very strange to say, but it's the truth.
It depends how you want to take it to say that they're not playing up to their capacity on offense. On one hand, it's they're doing enough to win with a lot of room to grow. On the other hand, the offense, you know, is unreliable and maybe should be playing up to its much closer to its capabilities by now. But I agree with you completely about how the win in Philadelphia has changed my thinking about the Bears. I don't think they're a championship contender. I know that a lot of Chicago wants to believe that right now, and you can go ahead. It's fine. We have to be a little more measured and a little more
Let's objective. Be clear. This is really fun. This is whether you cover the team or whether you root for the team, them playing relevant football.
Oh, and such a refreshing change.
Especially because, and you know, Jason, you know how I like the anniversaries of things.
Yes.
One year to the day. 1 year to the day right now, as you and I are speaking, the Bears botched the end of the game in Detroit. And 1 year to the day from Saturday, they fired Matt Eberflus in the low point of the franchise, probably this decade. So, stuff's really different.
Before the Eagles game, you're looking at them 8-3 and you're saying, okay, let's look at these last six games. They got to find two wins in there. And it's going to be hard digging up two wins out of that schedule. All right, they've got the Browns at home. There's one probably, even though that won't be as easy as it sounds because they've got a very good defense and a great pass rush. Where's the other win? You're not really feeling confident. Packers, Lions, you know, you're looking at like maybe Packers at home, maybe at 49ers. Right. Can they dig out two wins to get to 10 and make the playoffs? Not only are they so much closer now where they are really now have a strong chance, strong probability, and they're going to in the simulators and in everything else to make it. But you're right. You look at all these games and you say, well, why wouldn't they be competitive? Why wouldn't they have a chance in the games against Green Bay or even Detroit? This is a totally different team than the team that Detroit blew out in week two. That was so much a rough draft, a work in progress. Compared to where they're at now. And it's still a work in progress. But if they played Detroit right now, today, it would be a lot different than it was in week two.
I was just looking at a website, Jason, that's I think it's like playoffprobabilities.com or something, who say that the Bears making the playoffs is a 91% deal. That seems,
I think it's probably more like 70-75%, but that's still fantastic. 70 or 75 is still really good.
Right. And yeah, like you said, you know, the big question was where were you going to steal that one more win? And they did that and more on Friday night. I wanted to say and write Sunday, Jason, 1,000 times, but it is a Friday. Jason, we will be back to talk about the Green Bay freaking Packers next week. But until then, people can follow you and I on social media. Check us out on the Sun-Times website. And if you live in town, buy a paper. Just don't go out in the snow to do it, because that might be dangerous. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.